The European Union has not treated us well.
Stupid European elites jumping off the cliffs once again.
Yes, you are the guilty people, and you refuse to accept it.
This is EU Scream, the progressive politics podcast from Brussels, in association with EU Observer. I'm James, a journalist who's crisscrossed Europe for 15 years now. In this episode, racist policing, gender bias, Black Mirror-style mass surveillance. Computing, known as artificial intelligence, sorts vast amounts of data, faces, our web browsing habits, even our gestures, into automated predictions used by companies and governments. The technology holds great promise for applications like diagnosing disease and preventing catastrophes, yet it can exacerbate discrimination and inequality and be used to erode democracy. European authorities insist they can avoid dystopian uses of AI. In February, the European Commission took a step towards EU-wide legislation on AI with its white paper. It promises an approach of excellence and trust. But for some, trust has already been shaken. EU officials have backtracked on ideas for banning facial recognition in public spaces, and they've been accused of opacity about AI that's funded by the bloc's budget. We talked to four experts and legislators on those issues and about keeping AI safe for citizens, starting with Samira Raffaella, a Dutch member of the European Parliament from the Liberal D66 party. Raffaella coordinates on women's rights and gender equality for the Renew Group, and she's the first MEP from the Netherlands with Afro-Caribbean roots.
When it comes, for example, to women, all kinds of different women, also people of color, we see often a lack of data, and there are biases in the data. Who decides about the data? And I think these are the two specific levels that we need to touch upon and find solutions for. When it comes to facial recognition, we should be extremely careful. The law enforcement in the United States, for example, they have long used this facial recognition technology, and a study from 2016 found that half of American adults were in law enforcement facial recognition database, and court records showed also that facial recognition has been used as the primary basis for an arrest. But if you haven't organized the data well, if it wasn't inclusive, if it wasn't diverse, then you end up in a society where people of color, it's already proved, are being targeted in a negative way, and that fundamental rights are taken away from them.
The 2016 study cited by Raffaella is from the Center on Privacy and Technology at Georgetown Law. It revealed that photos of 117 million American adults were included in searchable police facial recognition databases, largely unregulated. The study warned that such systems were more likely to misidentify African Americans than Caucasians, a pattern that can be due to the way algorithms are developed, often by white male programmers using test photos of white subjects. Problems are then compounded by how African Americans are more likely to be enrolled in police databases than white Americans, and more likely to be the subjects of police stops and surveillance.
What I find unacceptable right now is that big tech has too much freedom to work in a way that we often do not know a lot about. And that is very threatening for the fundamental rights of our citizens. Big tech has a big role in definitely shaping the view of our institutions, but we should also set an EU framework in which we say, this is the framework in which you are going to work. It's very necessary that we become very bold in the EU right now. We, especially as legislators and politicians, we lag behind. And we need to make sure that we make good legislation that is being consulted in civil society so that we are sure that we have the legislation that really facilitates everyone in society. And we really need to hurry up, because data is becoming more and more complex. We get more layers of data. So it will be very difficult in a short time also to track how data is being created and who is behind it.
You might think Raffaella shouldn't be so worried. After all, Europe prides itself on being tough on big tech and on protecting individual privacy. But European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen came back from the World Economic Forum this year, expressing deep concerns about the lack of competitiveness of Europe's digital sector.
In Davos, someone asked me the very right question. He said, "Do we want Europe to be a global player or playground for others?" We have to define a new industrial way for Europe in this rapidly changing world.
To boost the prospects for Europe's digital industries, von der Leyen is advocating opening access to vast amounts of data, data from both the private and the public sectors.
It is indeed all about data. Data is the fuel of our economy. The same actually has to go for governments. They have an enormous amount of data that are being never ever used. 85% of all our data we collect are never used or underused. So we should share them because there's a huge amount of innovation in it, of entrepreneurship, missed opportunities.
And if we there's this idea that the more data you have, just the more intelligence you get. And that just isn't true.
Joanna Bryson is a globally recognized expert in AI. She advises governments and NGOs, and she's previously been affiliated with Harvard, Princeton, and Oxford. She's currently professor of ethics and technology at the Hertie School in Berlin.
First of all, if you just have the same data over and over and over, it doesn't matter that much. What matters is that you get a decent sampling of all the things you need to know. So you don't need infinite amounts of data. You do need to have a picture of every single person if you're going to track all the people around your country, which is one of the things that China seriously wants to do. That doesn't give them better intelligence, you know, like, oh, somehow the robot is going to be smarter sense. It does give them better intelligence about their citizens. And Chinese colleagues were saying, why is our data so much worse than American data was the best and then European was closer to American? But if you're in an autocracy, then you tend not to get the best data. If data is gathered by governments, it tends to say what the governments want to hear. And if data is gathered by commerce, then it's more likely to be a little better quality, to be honest, to be blunt. The biggest thing that the European Parliament can do is help us maintain accountability to get through, you know, blow holes through all the smoke, insisting that companies can prove they've done the right thing. There ought to be these logs that you can go through and see when there is software that discriminates incorrectly, that is less good for somebody of one ethnicity than another. Was that a mistake? And at this point, such a mistake would be culpable because we now know about that problem, right? It's been really well documented. So was it somebody being negligent, not doing sufficient due diligence, or was it deliberate? One of the things I worry about is that people think that AI is a special thing and they forget that there's programmers behind it. And because there's programmers behind it, you can absolutely deliberately go in and insert your biases because you're worried about who gets to vote for you and who doesn't. And so you put more people of one type into jail. It's not just bias, it's the problem, it's prejudice. What happens is someone designs a system, they pick one algorithm, they set a bunch of parameters, they train it for some time, they test it, they decide that they've got enough data or whatever, and they go forward. So there's a million architectural decisions, which should all be documented, just like if you're building a building, that you would keep track of all the architectural decisions. And just like when you're building a building, sometimes a little bit of fiddling happens right there and nobody remembers it and you have to go back and figure it out when you have a problem with the plumbing. There's a lot of pieces like that. But anyway, there is no magic machine learning algorithm that turns data into AI. That doesn't happen. The fact, of course, is that the majority of programmers right now are male. So what we're talking about is that if we use the data that's based on history, including the present, then we just replicate the stuff that we as a society have decided we don't want to keep replicating. Stereotype, though, is something you can't just train a machine to recognize. Stereotype is something you have to say this is something that our society has decided that even though you might find in the data, we don't want to see it anymore. For example, you cannot use gender to decide how much your car insurance is or something, but you can go off of names and figure out, you know, with machine learning, you can take out the gender, but still guess the gender because of names or because of some other life history thing. So you have to actively combat that. You can't just extract the information. You have to actually put something in to stop that, like a human system. If we have enough institutions enforcing accountability, then I think that you will get transparency. And so Microsoft, mostly in the cybersecurity space, not so much the AI, but they do have literally transparency centers. And not every government has stepped up to bring people that are good enough to go in. So those resources are being underutilized, some of them, whereas other governments are utilizing them. Pharma is a huge sector too. They have 10 times more IP than ICT, and yet there is government inspectors. So yes, you have to do some hiring up of people that can at least read code. They don't have to be code geniuses that can invent the next algorithm, but they need to at least be able to read code and say, yeah, we see that you were careful. We see that you've documented this. It's about how do you create sufficient transparency so that the external regulatory pressures can be efficient, so you can show you've done the right thing, you can be kind of let alone, and those parts, but still that proper regulation can be done centrally too. And that includes on really important things like convincing corporations to pay their share of the infrastructure. And it's not just big tech and everything else. So Palantir can endanger a lot of people. Cloudflare can make a lot of decisions that are, we might say, are quite moral, right? We can look at good guys and bad guys throughout the space.
Cloudflare is a San Francisco-based tech security company that protects customers' websites and apps. It provided services to the Daily Stormer, a neo-Nazi website, and to 8chan, an internet forum and a platform of choice for violent white supremacists. Cloudflare has since pulled the plug on those clients, but it warned investors late last year that it may maintain relationships with customers that others find hostile, offensive, or inappropriate. The first company Bryson refers to is Palantir Technologies, a Palo Alto-based data intelligence company co-founded by Trump backer and advisor Peter Thiel. He's also a co-founder of PayPal and an early investor in Facebook. Controversy stems from Palantir's role developing AI for predictive policing, military drones, work it allegedly did for Cambridge Analytica, and from systems to aid the arrest and deportation of migrants.
There is a lot of concern, legitimate concern, about what happens on our border, how it happens, and what does the enforcement look like.
That's Palantir CEO Alex Karp on CNBC in January.
Certainly, it's a de minimis part of our work, finding people in our country who are undocumented, but it's a legitimate, complex issue. My personal position is we acknowledge the complexity. The people protesting, whom I respect, should also acknowledge the complexity.
I prefer this focus about accountability, transparency, that you don't talk about technology itself being ethical. You talk about the ethical application of the technology. So there may be a good way and a bad way to use face recognition, or there may be a good or a bad way, not so much to use it, but at, you know, times when you use it and times when you don't. If you're in Europe, if you're going through, you know, Schiphol or something, then your passport, it checks to see if you're the person whose picture is in the chip on your passport. That's not scanning a giant global database of faces. That's saying, here's face recognition, here's the chip that says what your face should look like. And so that's considered to be an okay thing, as long as it's, again, adequately cyber secure, right? The biggest one I've heard people argue that you cannot do is the decision to kill. So this is the autonomous weapon systems people that say that. There's something fundamental about human dignity. You cannot have the system make a decision about who to kill. Well, what does that, again, what does that even mean? What, you know, there's an awful lot of navigation that's already happening with these smart weapons or whatever, but a human has decided how to program it, where to send it. You know, exactly when you draw that line, it's going to shift depending on the quality of the technology, the quality of the control, how much you trust the people who are controlling it. That's why I prefer this focus about accountability, transparency, good institutions enforcing accountability. Then I think that you will get transparency, and with it, sort of clarity and better engineering.
should there be any lines that we draw? Are there any impermissible uses of AI? What are the legal limits?
Sarah Chander got interested in how anti-racism and digital rights intersect in her previous job with the European Network Against Racism. She's now a senior policy advisor for the Brussels-based European Digital Rights Association, EDRI, focusing on AI and other tech issues.
Facial recognition is part of a wider set of infrastructures, but there is very little analysis, very little discussion in the EU white paper of what I think is some of the main concerns for civil society. EDRI have just released our position to ban biometric or mass surveillance, and the AI regulation provides a perfect moment to do that. Will it do that is the question. I think they definitely could do that. The law is there, the legal basis is there for it to happen and for member states to follow that. And facial recognition should be not just held off for a few years, but these technologies should be banned. I think COVID teaches us something about AI, which is such that many of the issues that were previously, I think, left for marginalized communities, so privacy implications, complete ongoing surveillance, now we see how they have been brought to mainstream society. So we see that in Poland, for example, you could be subject to an app which requires you to take a picture every 20 minutes of yourself using facial recognition technology. In the UK, the government have contracted Faculty and Palantir to essentially analyze confidential patient data as a response to the crisis.
That's Palantir again, the intelligence company co-founded by Trump backer and Silicon Valley guru Peter Thiel. As the coronavirus spread in the UK, Palantir agreed for a nominal sum of £1 to deploy its software to help the National Health Service anticipate demand for essentials like beds and ventilators.
To respond effectively to the COVID-19 crisis, government organizations need a 360-degree awareness of how the situation is developing on the ground. Palantir Foundry can enable this in less than a week from the time we receive data access, bringing together...
The arrangement included giving Palantir access to sensitive personal data, but it's not supposed to use it for any wider purpose without the NHS's permission.
The EU white paper looks to promote the adoption of AI specifically in the public sector. It's quite emphatic on that, and this is something that has to be questioned. Should we promote this without further discussion, without further scientific evidence, or should we have a broader conversation about that? So we're talking about use of predictive policing, which is shown to be contributing to over-policing of racialized communities, highly infringing on people's right to a fair trial. Also, the use of AI, where it is the sole determiner of people's access to essential services. And this, I think, then really needs to be a lot more research on, especially about how they are used in Europe. AI has the power to touch on many areas and many areas that affect people's lives, like healthcare, like whether they have access to their benefits or not. If we don't deal with the governance issues of some of these things, which are major decisions, then we have run the risk of seeing Cambridge Analytica and seeing Clearview AI's technology and AI specifically.
Clearview AI. This company has created a database of billions of faces copied from all across the internet, including photos scraped from social networks. And there's a Palantir connection, since one of Clearview's early investors is Peter Thiel. Among Clearview AI's customers are government agencies and companies, eager to tap into more facial recognition capability than even law enforcement had access to in the past.
We are complying with all the different privacy laws that are out there in the different jurisdictions, etc.
That's Clearview AI's founder, Hon Ton Tat, speaking to CNN in March.
There's a lot of controls in place to make sure that we maximize the upside and the value this provides to society and law enforcement and keeping children safe and keeping our community safe and really making sure that it's not abused. And we haven't had anyone wrongfully arrested from facial recognition using our tool or even wrongfully detained. So,
there are concerns Clearview AI could make its technology available to clients in countries with poor records on human rights and civil liberties, And that has exacerbated concerns about how an end to privacy in public spaces could be abused by authoritarian governments.
Seeing all of these human rights infringing deployments of technology and AI specifically, we have to think about the infrastructure, the immense power that we are actually handing to security companies, to tech companies. And then we have to look at how can governments and also supranational bodies like the EU address things like this. The answer, I think, really is to actually take the EU a little bit further in what it's trying to do with this white paper. Yes, say dealing with bias is good. We need to do that because these issues are real. Yes, if we have then more simple uses, more non-controversial uses of AI, then of course they should be allowed. They should be allowed to freely flourish, and certification systems could play a role there in helping consumers, helping people determine which are good to use, which are fair, which are created and maintained by ethical companies. But we also need to touch on legal limits on the impermissible uses of AI. Why have we skipped over that conversation in favor of industrial policy-led considerations, but also ideas that we can somehow fix the technology and all will be good?
The European Commission says it's still considering the specific circumstances that might justify the use of facial recognition in public spaces. It also strenuously denies that its push for data sharing has anything to do with social control and surveillance. But looking more widely, we still don't know how AI applications that decide who gets recruited, who gets loans, and who sees what kinds of posts on social media, let alone applications that can kill and injure directly, will be regulated here or globally. Certification models for AI have emerged, but none has yet gathered mainstream support. Standards have been developed related to AI, but none has been agreed internationally that deals directly with these issues. Journalists and NGOs can be watchdogs, but they can't catch all of the problems all of the time. Meanwhile, tech companies are pushing ethical self-scrutiny, which is potentially at odds with Europe's stated goal of making fundamental rights paramount.
You know, I've long been wary of a mutual interest of certain industries and government agencies to expand power over citizens and their information and data.
Patrick Breyer is a German digital rights activist who was formerly a district court judge and member of the Schleswig-Holstein State Parliament. Since last year, he has represented the German pirates in an alliance with the Greens at the European Parliament. He campaigns in favor of civil liberties in the digital age and against corporate influence in lawmaking. Among the institutions that concern Breyer is the European Commission, led by fellow German Ursula von der Leyen, and where Frenchman Thierry Breton is in charge of promoting digital technologies.
Von der Leyen, who's coming from a conservative party, of course, and Mr. Breton, who's close to Macron's liberal movement, and he was an industry leader of a French IT company himself, are at a risk of considering even personal data to be a resource that could be exploited for the benefit of European industry. I am wary of the announced Data Act, which is to be actual legislation on sharing data, on compelling actors to share data. And it remains to be seen whether that will be clearly confined to non-personal data. And that's completely opposed to the idea of personal information and informational self-determination, meaning that every citizen has a fundamental right to be in control of their personal data and personal information. And that idea doesn't really feature in the Commission's data strategy. Mr. Breton, of course, as a former business leader, is used to making business internationally. However, his position on Palantir somewhat contradicts what he says on digital sovereignty in other respects.
Some European governments are relying on the US software company Palantir to analyze big data sets. Are you concerned?
You know, we are in a global environment, and Palantir is doing some things very, very specific that we are not used. I'm not concerned here. Especially.
Palantir is a US-based company, which means that Palantir cannot guarantee, or if it does, it is not enforceable, that any data it gets hold of, such as health data, it cannot guarantee that US authorities will not request access to this data, even if it is processing it in Europe. Yes, it would be illegal under EU law to comply with the US Cloud Act, which basically provides that US authorities have access to data held by US companies or their subsidiaries anywhere in the world. However, we can't be sure how companies will handle these colliding laws. And therefore, I think the Cloud Act really rules out cooperation with US companies in that context.
The core mission of our company always was to make the West, especially America, the strongest in the world, the strongest ever been.
Palantir CEO Alex Karp.
This is a zero-sum thing. The country with the most important AI, most powerful AI, will determine the rules.
Several questions have been tabled on Clearview AI.
That's Clearview AI again, the company that's created a database of billions of faces copied from all across the internet, and where Trump backer Peter Thiel is a key investor.
The Swedish Data Protection Authority is investigating Clearview AI services being used by Swedish authorities, and they have mentioned that apparently EU authorities are using their services. There are several written questions pending from the Renew group that is asking which agencies are actually using Clearview. There is one by Stelios Kologlu, who basically asks about compliance of their services with EU law. I'm waiting for these questions to be answered. It's really a scandal that the commission, they haven't answered it since January, because they're obliged to do so within 6 weeks. And I'm afraid that this is becoming a general practice. And what I think we need when it comes to Clearview is an EU ban on biometric mass surveillance.
That may not be so far-fetched. San Francisco is among the cities that have already banned facial recognition. A European agency, the European Data Protection Board, has warned law enforcement bodies here that use of Clearview AI is likely not consistent with EU privacy rules. And in a highly symbolic move in the wake of George Floyd's death, IBM said it's getting out of the facial recognition business entirely. IBM also questioned whether the technology should be used at all by law enforcement, given the evidence of links with racially based surveillance. But IBM wasn't a heavyweight in the facial recognition sector to start with, and there are plenty of other firms touting systems to securocrats. Take, for example, Europe's so-called iBorder Control Project, developed in partnership with European tech companies to nab travelers trying to enter the Schengen area who tell lies.
So iBorder Control is an EU-funded research project. One component is the so-called deception detection, or I call it a video lie detector. And the way it's supposed to work is somebody wishing to travel to the EU would have to take an interview in front of their smartphone or laptop with the video camera activated. And when answering several questions about their travel intentions, their face would be recorded and automatically analyzed for micro expressions that apparently, according to the company that markets the technology, will give an indication of whether they are lying or not. If they are lying, then they would be subjected to intense questioning or maybe even refusal to enter the EU altogether. But I have called it voodoo AI because it is very intransparent, and the iBorder control that was supposed to validate this technology has not released any meaningful information about the outcome of the trials of this technology at EU land borders in Hungary, in Latvia, and in Greece, where it was trialed.
The European Commission said it encourages projects it funds, like iBorder Control, to publicize results as much as possible. It also said more information would be forthcoming this year. But Breyer suggests the Commission is in an increasingly untenable position, caught between upholding ethics that have helped burnish the EU's reputation and defending the interests of industries it thinks will enhance the bloc's competitiveness and security.
Plus, there is the general problem of facial recognition technology. If women, for example, or people of color are labeled liars more often because the technology is less reliable on them. And all these ethical and legal questions have been considered in the course of this eye border control project, but the EU refuses to publish them, arguing that this would undermine the commercial interest of the companies involved and that it would actually make it more difficult to sell the technology. And I find this terrifying. An EU commission authority basically arguing that commercial interests are more important than the public and the legislator and the scientists being able to discuss a new technology that would have a fundamental impact on trust in society potentially, because it could be used on everybody to find out whether they are telling the truth, but would have the potential of falsely incriminating thousands and millions of people.
The European Commission said the Parliament sets its own deadlines for receiving answers to questions from members, but that it makes every effort to reply in good time. It said one of the queries about eye border control already had been answered, and that two more were being finalized. We're thankful to Respublika Europa, Helena Malikova, and Paula Gajekojewska for helping organize the online event Fair AI for Europe, which inspired this episode and which provided some of its content. Find out more about Respublika Europa at respublikaeuropa.eu. You can check our website at euscream.com for more episodes. EU Scream is edited and mixed by me, James Cantor. Tom Brooks and I produce the show. Thanks for listening.